Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound, where on today's show we're asking, how do you turn a band into an exhibition? It happened with Bowie at the V&A, and now it's happening with the Rolling Stones at the Saatchi Gallery. Costumes, album cover design, handwritten lyrics, the myth of creation. Is it art or just posh memorabilia? Exhibitionism is the Rolling Stones show at Saatchi, done with the cooperation of the band. There's been a lot of crawling through Keith Richards' attic, rifling through Mick Jagger's drawers. So in a way, it's an official biography in Technicolor and with very good loudspeakers. We ask, how do you turn a band into an exhibition? Or coming up on today's episode of Culture with me, Robert Bound. Do stay tuned.
Wait, the Stones are one of the most infamous bands in rock history.
You know, America couldn't believe what was happening to their kids. They were listening to this music, buying their albums. Album covers with pictures of the boys lying around in homes, making parents sick. But the Billboard summed it up. The sound, face, and mind of today is more relative to the hope of tomorrow and the reality of destruction. That the blind who cannot see, their children for fear and division, something that grew unrelated, five reflections of today's children, the Rolling Stones.
Will Russell and Abbott Miller are partners at the design firm Pentagram, which was responsible for working with curator Eileen Gallagher to put on this mega show. They showed me around the vast and colourful exhibition, and here you join us in a painstaking recreation of the Stones' first apartment in Edith Grove in Chelsea. Here's Will.
This is a recreation of the front room. There's all the records that they used to listen to, the old blues. And it's just this filthy living space with a bed in the corner.
And we've got some of the kind of formative records here, Muddy Waters, Chuck Berry, the kind of stuff that, as we saw a couple of rooms before, were the records that turned Mick and Keith onto each other when they met at Dartford railway station. The attention to detail in here is kind of amazing. It must have been fun raiding the record stores and kind of doing the research for this.
And eBay.
Yeah, it was eBay, was it?
Yeah, a lot of beer bottles from eBay. Everything in here is historically accurate, so it's kind of a research project, not just set decoration. It's pretty meticulous. So every newspaper and magazine you see is actually from, you know, this year.
And the band members presumably must have kind of, they've given a lot of their input into this show, guys, but were they always in harmony over the exact records that were in the house, the brand of the beer bottles, the type of cigarettes they were smoking in the early 60s there?
Well, the records, certainly, when we did a presentation at Pentagram's office and they were all there, they were kind of arguing about, oh, no, what about this record? And we used to listen to this all the time. And they used to wire their guitars through the radiogram to actually use it as an amplifier, because they didn't have their own amps then.
When you're putting together an exhibition like this, are you thinking of kind of key words? Are you thinking of sights, sounds, smells? What are the kind of things that have to kind of stay in your memory to make sure you're on the right track when you're putting something so big and comprehensive together?
I think what was a real insight about the show that happened during its design development was this idea of really polished and really raw. So Edith Grove is a good example of this very tactile, kind of grungy realness, but then you also have elements in the show, other galleries that feel very polished, and that was important to the band. They really wanted both dynamics, because that's really, it speaks to where they came from, but also the character of their music. It's, you know, it sounds very authentic, but it's also extremely sophisticated. So the show manages to have it both ways in terms of that rhythm. And the way that the show is broken into themes allows us to really develop a different feel for each of these galleries that we really like. You know, when you look from here back to there, you get this strange juxtaposition of raw and cooked, you know?
Yeah, right.
We first kind of came and met the producers to talk about the show in London. And, you know, they were talking to a number of people about the project. And just went really well.
I guess it was a competitive interview situation, yeah. and we got the gig, which was just great.
Yeah. And how do you decide? I mean, you know, this exhibition, it's a long show. Here it goes. I think that's the finale. That's happening. How on earth do you decide how to pace it? You've got kind of quiet moments and loud moments and all the rest of it, but I wonder how that works.
Well, it's interesting because the producers really had formulated the thematic structure. So we already had the kind of backbone of this idea of episodes in the story as opposed to a history. And so the episodes gave us a kind of a set list, and then we built the show off of that, thinking about the quality of those experiences along the way. So it was kind of an interesting thing of kind of beginning with a bit of a spine and then figuring that we could more deliberately shift the moods as you went through that story. That was partly a mix of the artifacts, but also just the kind of qualities of each room, whether it's this polished or raw, dense or more open.
Yeah, I think we very quickly came to the idea that each theme would have a different aesthetic, and we would focus that very particularly for that theme. And then we really shuffled these kind of the rooms around a lot as we were going through the process, which what came after what, and just to make sure that the kind of the rhythm of the show and the experience kind of held together and then built to the crescendo at the end.
And you know, there's so much archive, there are so many, you know, you could make a show just about bits of paper, or just about pianos and guitars, or just about microphones. You can bore down into crazy levels of detail. I'm interested in how you pace it. I guess it's like putting an album together. You need your ballads, and you need your rock and roll numbers, yeah. You need your fast songs. Is that something that is just an instinct for you and the producers of the show? Or do you have to kind of put that together and then rearrange things once things are up on the wall?
Well, I think it's as much the curator of the show, Eileen Gallagher, has a long history of putting together exhibitions. We've worked with her before, and the idea of satisfying the super fan and satisfying the kid that actually, you know, doesn't know that much about the Stones, and knowing that there is this mix of kind of teaching, but also, you know, totally based in the idea of entertainment. And that's what really makes this show different for us, is first and foremost, it's a piece of popular entertainment. Secondarily, you learn a lot about the cultural history of the Stones and the times. And so it's this interesting mix of teaching versus entertaining. And
entertainment was very much the brief at the beginning as well. It had to be a lot of fun to come to this show. I mean, it's not just a kind of a straight narrative at all.
And I think there's lessons to be learned about just the extent to which people can really dwell on a musical instrument displayed in a case. You know, there's a limit. Super fans will adore that, but for a lot of people, just looking at a guitar isn't necessarily a thrill. So the attempt to turn whatever moment possible into something experiential and something that feels like you're there or that is evocative of a time and a place was really our mandate with the show.
And you're quite sure, just finally, you're quite sure they could remember everything?
Yeah, I think
absolutely.
So. I think so. They really are incredibly precise about their memories, actually.
Very exacting.
Off the break, we're heading back to the Saatchi Gallery to continue our tour. Do stay tuned.
Meet the Writers is the show in which we have a chance to get intimate with some exciting authors. Airing at 1500 every Saturday and available as a podcast thereafter, it's an in-depth discussion about the life and work of a different writer every week, with me, Georgina Godwin, on Monocle 24.
Welcome back to Culture with me, Robert Bound, where we're answering the question, how do you turn a band into an exhibition? Taking as our cue a just-open show all about the Rolling Stones at London's Saatchi Gallery. We're being shown around by the exhibition's designers, Will Russell and Abbott Miller from Pentagram. We're going to pick it up again in a room ruled by one of Charlie Watts' drum kits, a rather ingenious ticker board that shows us the band's early shows and their mad schedule. Small towns in Sussex one minute, San Diego the next. Oh, and some very interesting interesting fan questionnaires from the early days of pop magazines.
This space we called Meet the Band. So this is where you first encounter some artifacts, some original artifacts. But it's also talking about the contrast from their grungy apartment to this kind of the amazing upwell of fans that suddenly happened to them.
I mean, it's a green room as well, which is kind of nice. There's obviously no mistake there.
Yes. Yeah, what you get is this sort of almost sense of overnight fame. And suddenly they go from this sort of hovel in the previous gallery to having fan magazines, you know, devoted to each one of the band members. So the room really is meant to kind of throw you into the sense of almost like a frenzy. Like the floor has all these images of adoring fans. This display board is in the style of kind of a train flip board. We were amazed because we had this one document that showed their touring schedule, which was almost daily and sometimes twice a day performances for almost 3 years. So you get the sense like this is a very hardworking group of guys. And we wanted to show that because it's kind of astonishing when you think about just the work of it.
And it's amazing. I'm loving seeing kind of East Grinstead and Guildford popping up on the same ticker board as San Diego and Chicago as well. Yeah. It does give you a sense of how far they traveled so quickly and all the rest of it. In terms of the musical instruments that we see in this room, they've been loaned by the band. I mean, how easy are these to sort of cart about? Did they arrive in the kind of in the kit form that they would have done if they were going to be used on stage? I guess they did.
Yeah, they arrive in their own cases, all carefully. The archive, they have an archive of instruments and clothes. It's pretty substantial, and they look after stuff pretty well.
This room probably has the biggest concentration of things from private collectors because early on they weren't thinking of themselves as world famous Rolling Stones, and other people got these materials in different ways. And I think probably around 1970, they started to realize we should keep this stuff. You know, this may be valuable.
So we've walked into a kind of moody room entitled Recording. It feels like we're in something of a nerve center. Talk us through the exhibition design of this place, because this is fantastic and it does feel like we're in a particular recording studio. Is it one, or is it based on a greatest hits of all their recording studios?
This to the right is very much Olympic Studios, trying to give some representation of it.
What we love about this room is that it really allows you to talk about the craft of making music and how important recording was as a creative piece of their process. So it was also a really great way of showing a whole lot of material and kind of getting the opportunity to display the stuff in a way that didn't feel precious. It's sort of like Edith Grove, a bit of a slice of life moment for the band.
Yeah, they were very keen to have, because the recording is so important to their careers, and they were very keen that there was this setup where people could get an insight into their life when they're in the recording studio.
And we're obviously looking through the studio glass here. It's like we're in the control room and they're in the studio. We've got that kind of nice fish tank feeling about it as well, rather than, you know, there's a fourth wall to be broken here as well.
Yeah, and one of the beautiful things about this setup is that there's wonderful footage from the Godard movie, Sympathy for the Devil, which is recorded or filmed at Olympic. So on the backdrops in this room, you see the Godard film, footage from the Godard film, which is what the whole sort of mise-en-scene refers to. So you get this sort of doubling of this space that you're looking at, but also glimpses into the recording sessions.
Well, it's a really effective room. I think this is the kind of thing that people want to stay and study. And we've got headphones lined up along here. What can we hear on these?
This includes several segments about the recording process. Several of them feature Don Was, who is one of their principal producing collaborators. And he basically talks about how they were fans of what Don Was called the good take. And he said they would come back, you know, they'd re-record something 28 days until they got the track that they really were happy with. And they were just, you kind of don't think of that when you think of their music, but they were obsessive about the quality of what they were playing.
It's the most interactive gallery, I think. There's many iPads in here and also in the room next door. So there's a moment where you can actually really start playing with a bit of things to get a bit more information.
So in the next gallery, we have the actual tracks. The original stems were used to create basically a console on an iPad where you can kind of strip away all the instruments or focus on just two or just hear the vocals. And it's fascinating because you're basically able to pull away all the instruments and just listen to Mick or just listen to Charlie on his drum.
Everyone wanted to produce the Stones. This is giving everyone their chance. I mean, did you call it the Guitar Temple?
Guitar Gallery.
The Guitar Gallery. Sorry, that's my religion. I'm putting the veneer of religiosity on it.
A lot of the galleries we had working names for that don't actually make their way into the gallery itself. So this is actually called Music and Lyrics. But for a year and a half, we called it Guitar Gallery. But it is meant to be the temple of, you know, super fans to see the guitars and mix harmonicas and get to fidget with their music.
This is a bit like the sort of dawn of creation in this room as well. There's a lot of kind of anecdotes from the band members talking about how certain songs were made. I was just listening to Keith talking about the riff from waking up and discovering the riff from Satisfaction is like a gift from God sort of thing. You don't get a sense actually of any of this stuff that there's an idea of precocity or actually a sense of how precious these things were. Maybe they all realize how precious they are now because they're pieces of cultural history.
Yeah.
But certainly for 20 years, it was just like, this is what we do, right?
Yeah, and they had no idea of the kind of the weight that they might carry in the future. You know, I think it was very throwaway and very intuitive and immediate how they worked on everything. And the kind of collecting stuff didn't matter.
I know Mick was really interested in trying to talk about songwriting, but he made the point that there is no room they go to for songwriting. There's not a scenario that you can create where the audiences would understand the process of songwriting because it happens on the road and it happens in a hotel room, and so everything seemed kind of kitschy you were trying to evoke that, but the Guitar Gallery became a place where we could really talk again about the artistry of creating music. And it does feel like a temple, you know, that's intentional. But they are not precious about it at all. And they get a kick out of the kind of museumification of them. You know, they think it's funny.
That was Will Russell and Abbott Miller, partners at Pentagram, showing us around the exhibitionism show at the Saatchi Gallery, a show they designed. Someone else who had a good nose around the exhibition last week was good friend of the Culture Show and rock and pop critic for The Times, Will Hodgkinson. What did he make of it?
Because it's the Rolling Stones and they're behind it, it's the great blessing of the exhibition and its curse. The blessing is that the access is phenomenal. So you have all the stage costumes, you know, the Ozzy Clark jumpsuits and the Mr. Fish sort of man dress that he wore in at Hyde Park in 1969, all that stuff. You know, if you're a real Stones fan, it's fantastic to see the original album proofs and the advertisement, which was the inspiration for Some Girls, the cover.
This was fascinating stuff, actually. This room, I thought, was really good, actually. The album art and the kind of, the genesis of all that artwork and stuff was fascinating stuff. Actually.
I loved all that stuff.
Yeah.
And there were things like, we know that Warhol was involved with the Stones. He did the Sticky Fingers cover. But I didn't know that there are all these Warhol prints of Mick Jagger, or lithographs and drawings. And it was great to see all that. My misgiving for the exhibition was that because the Rolling Stones are so involved, which means that you can get all this stuff, it also means that it felt a little bit like the art gallery equivalent of a tour brochure, where you're really getting a kind of extended advertisement for the Stones, and you're not digging into all the things that make them really fascinating, which is all the countercultural stuff, the Redlands bust, the death of Brian Jones, what happened to Altamont in 1969 when a young fan died, and all of these things, which meant that the Stones were dangerous and they're at the height of this clash between the counterculture and the establishment and sort of balancing between the two. For me, the exhibition skated over all of that and went for a fascinating and definitely worth seeing, but also rather whitewashed version. The exhibition is fantastic on a visual level. That's what I felt. You know, so like we were talking about earlier, you're going through all the artwork is great and all the affiliated artwork. There's things like the Richard Hamilton Swinging London piece, which was Mick Jagger and Robert Fraser as they're heading off to jail. But that was, it didn't dig deep. It didn't show the narrative in a way that would have happened if it was a curator who was putting it together about an artist long dead. It didn't have that historical objectivity which you'd expect from a big exhibition. I've been holding out so long, I've been sleeping all along.
Can't really talk about exhibitionism in this new show about the Rolling Stones without also talking about David Bowie Is, which was the Victoria and Albert Museum kicked off at the V&A, which kind of set the pace. And you must have thought that was in the back of their minds when they were putting this thing together. And that managed to not be hagiography. It managed to be, it teased out the lines between David Bowie and the culture he took his ideas from and what he gave back to the wider culture, whether it was pop music, whether it was art, whether it was literature, whether it was simply album design, whatever it might be. How do you think exhibitionism fits into that sort of thing about as an actual art exhibition as far as paintings on a wall and exhibits rather than just here's some interesting facts about a band?
I think one of the differences is that David Bowie had this very unusual, pretty much unique career where he somehow represented the culture, what was going on, even though it was seen as outlandish or freakish, but somehow he did. You know, so in the 80s, the MTV period, he was sort of about money and flashiness. In the 70s, it was about androgyny. And towards the end of his life, it was about sort of post-millennial angst. And somehow it always, like you say, it reached out into the culture. The Stones didn't quite do that. The Stones are a rock and roll band, and this is really what makes them great. The world has to come to them, and they create their own universe. For me, the best bits of the show were the ones where you did get a glimpse into their strange world. So it was almost the beginning and the end. The first room I absolutely loved. It was a recreation of Edith Grove, the flat that Mick and Keith and Brian Jones used to share. And it was famously squalid.
Yeah.
This was 1962. It was post-war. There wasn't much money around and there's no money around for them. The band was only getting together. And I loved that. You know, it even smelt pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the show, there was a backstage area, you know, backstage recreation. And even though, you know, you could say it was kind of banal, why would you need just like sheets of A4 paper or anything? That's what it's like. It does feel like an impromptu office backstage.
Strangely, they were my two favourite rooms as well.
Yeah,
I really felt that they were places where you knew a band would start off writing songs and end up existing in this strange international two nights in a hotel room kind of per city kind of life.
Exactly. Yeah. And what I felt for those two rooms, it was different from the Bowie thing. You're going into the Stones world, which, let's face it, is locked out for most of us. We get the show, but we don't get the layers of hierarchy which exist, and we don't get inside that strange world. So for me, that really worked.
We talked before, we mentioned in passing the idea of how loud the exhibition is, which I really liked, actually. It wasn't one of those things, you couldn't turn the volume down or anything, which I really like, actually. It did seem like there's a really nice room, which is the kind of what you might call the kind of guitar temple. It was almost like 12 stations of the cross, each with one of Keith or Ronnie or Bill Wyman's guitars. That was really nice. And you got to play around with the different settings. You could listen to each of the eight tracks, whatever they might be, on their drums, bass, vocals, and the rest of it, which was a nice kind of trick, a bit like playing GarageBand, maybe on your Mac or something like that. That was a kind of fun thing to do. But it was all kind of loud. And obviously, there's a great crescendo. There's a great kind of, there's a kind of beast of live performance at the end, which is super loud as well. That was something I kind of liked, at least, that they didn't allow you to turn the volume down on anything. You know?
No, that was good.
Proper listening volume.
I think if you had just a sort of passing interest in the Stones and you're a tourist coming to London and you wanted to see something really exciting and fun, I think this is a really great exhibition. It's a little bit like going to something like Madame Tussauds in a way, more than...
Strangely, I thought that, yes.
More than going to a sort of avant-garde art exhibition. It's more fits in that world. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. You know, the 3D concert, which is in the final room, is brilliant. You know, you're in there and, yeah. and you it does feel like you're at a Stones concert. And like I said, the backstage and, you know, like you said, all the guitars, which you'd never see anywhere else. All of that stuff, I think, is fantastic. So I kind of think it's best for if you're a real Stones nerd, which I am, then it's great. If you've got a passing interest in the Stones, it's fantastic. I'd say where it falls down is more if you're looking at it as a kind of cultural study, which the David Bowie exhibition more fell into the camp of.
And we talked about the exhibition design in this show as well. Pentagram of New York did that. Now, I thought that was done kind of really well. There were a lot of kind of little sort of underlit dark walkways, which very much reminded me of being kind of backstage at a big, big kind of high production rock and roll gig, you know, of this era at least. It kept its kind of secrets close to its chest until the next room. It was very good at revealing things and it would kind of tempt you into the next room with lots of bits of music or flashes of video or stuff. What did you think about the actual walking around the show room after room? I kind of thought that had a really nice pace to it.
No, I really liked it.
I wonder what you think of that.
Really liked it. There were things like before you got to the disgusting Edith Grove flat, which is the entire place was recreated.
Yeah.
So that was just great.
And that, by the way, was an interesting thing. When I walked around with the show designers, apparently Mick Jagger said, "You put too many beer bottles in. We didn't have enough money to buy that much beer." So it was kind of good. There was an overflowing ashtray, but not as many beer bottles
many beer
as
bottles.
You might think for a
no,
young
which, band. And that is, you see, that's a sign of Mick Jagger's genius to get things like that right.
Yes.
That was superb. I really liked the construction. There was a room before you got there, which was just a kind of sensory overload of images of the Stones. And the way it was designed was superb because it kind of came at you and it's exciting, but it wasn't irritating, which it could have been. And it was only one room, quite a small room. And so from then on, it's like a kind of rabbit warren almost, isn't it? You pass the way it's designed, you go through the Saatchi Gallery, which is big. I think it's 9 rooms.
Yeah, it's a big gallery.
And you're not aware particularly of where you are. Because you get lost inside this world. And I thought that was a very, very clever piece of design. And so you're into a very glamorous, the stage area, or you're in the dowdy bit in their early days, or, you know, the kind of sweet bit where, you know, they're just showing all their guitars. And you're thrown into these different moods. And I thought that was really good. You know, you're very much quietly controlled. Your mood is being your mood is being very, very slightly altered. Subtly altered as you go along. And I thought that was great. So yeah, the design really, really good. Wild, wild horses. We'll ride them someday.
That was Will Hodgkinson, rock and pop critic for The Times. Bring us to the end of today's show. An exhibitionism, The Rolling Stones, is on at the Saatchi Gallery until September the 4th. Tickets available at saatchigallery.com. So how do you turn a band into an exhibition? Well, you need their help to get the best stuff. You need to raid the archive. And of course, you need some top class exhibition design. But you also need some grit to make the best oyster. You need it to be loud too, as well as proud. And it helps if you have a 50-year career to draw on. That brings us to the end of today's show. You've been listening to Culture, where my producer was our very own Keith Holly Fisher. Join me again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds, and thank you very much for tuning in.